Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Eric Corum, founder of AIM7. Welcome back to The Blueprint, where we distill cutting-edge science, leadership, and life skills into simple tactics optimized for your busy lifestyle and goals. Did you know that there is a proper pooping posture? Well, after today's episode, you're going to know what it is. And I'm joined today by renowned dietitian Kate Scarlatta, and she's going to reveal the most common culprits plaguing gut health, including lactose, gluten, FODMAPs, and more. With over 30 years of expertise in GI nutrition, Kate shares easy at-home tests to identify your triggers and whether blood work offers answers, how to personalize elimination diets, and science-backed solutions to get your digestion back on track. And if you learned something today, you might want to go check out her new book, Mind Your Gut, a science-based whole-body guide to living well with IBS. The link is in the show notes. So let's get right to it. Let's lean in and learn from the best. So what are the primary causes for food intolerances, and how do you know if you have one?
Often food intolerance presents with GI symptoms primarily. So this is, you know, extensive bloating. Now, when I say bloating, people are like, oh, I have bloating. You know, everyone has bloating at some, you eat a big meal, you're going to feel a little bloat. That's normal. But bloating that I would be like, this could be a food intolerance, is like consistent bloating, regardless of really what you eat, and having it almost all the time. But gas, bloating, diarrhea, even constipation can sort of indicate that things, you know, potentially may be related to a food intolerance. It's different from a food allergy, obviously. Food allergies, you can have anaphylactic, life-threatening reactions. Food intolerances don't come with that, but they can really impact your quality of life. So different types of food intolerances could be lactose. We also see sucrose intolerance. There's a condition called sucrase isomaltase deficiency that we're learning. We used to see just in kids, but we're really seeing this sort of increase incident, not even increase incidence, but like an awareness that this actually does happen in adults as well that have a lot of diarrhea. There's gluten intolerance, and that can be the spectrum of having celiac disease, where gluten is downright toxic and causes inflammation in the gut, or a spectrum of that, which is just an intolerance without the actual disease of celiac disease. So some people find they have brain fog, some extra intestinal symptoms with gluten intake. There's a lot of misinformation about gluten online and on the social media, you know, places. So it's not really the devil, but in the wrong, you know, in some people's hands, it's just not well tolerated. So those are a few examples. Histamine intolerance is sort of one that's been thrown out there a little bit too. And histamine can cause an overabundance of histamine that your body is unable to clear, can cause hives. So we do see that sometimes in clinical practice as well. And of course, my area of expertise is a FODMAP sensitivity, which we see. FODMAP's an acronym that stands for, we can get into a little more detail, but it's a broad spectrum of carbohydrates that can trigger symptoms in people with irritable bowel syndrome.
Let's talk about it. That was on my list. I want to know more about FODMAP.
So interesting. So it's really taking all lactose and a number of other small carbohydrates that are commonly malabsorbed. And when they're malabsorbed, can trigger diarrhea, bloating, and all the symptoms that people experience with IBS, and restricting them for a short period of time. This is not a long-term diet. This is, let's see if you are intolerant to these FODMAPs. So the word FODMAP, it's an acronym. It stands for fermentable, for the F. The O, the D, the M, and the P stand for these other small chain carbohydrates. So for instance, O is an oligosaccharide, and oligosaccharides are in our beans, the musical fruit, of course, wheat, onion, garlic, rye, just to give you some examples. The D in FODMAP is a disaccharide. That's a two-chain sugar. That's lactose, which is a commonly malabsorbed sugar. The M in FODMAPs, I think I missed that one. That's fructose. And that's fructose is common to foods like fruits. But when it's in really excess in a food, it is poorly absorbed because mm-hmm. fructose needs glucose present to really, what I often say to my patients, to open up that doorway into the bloodstream. Glucose is a door opener and then fructose scooches in. So it's helpful when the food has equal amounts, but when there's extra fructose, that extra fructose often gets malabsorbed. And fructose is really good at dragging in a lot of water. So it can lead to cramping and uncomfortable diarrhea and things due to that sort of water dragging effect. And then the P in FODMAP stands for polyols. It's not an easy diet. So if I've lost a few of you, I apologize.
My goodness.
P is polyols, and those are sugar alcohols, primarily sorbitol and mannitol, which are naturally found in many fruits and vegetables, as well as like in your sugar-free gum and mints, you'll see sorbitol or mannitol or maltitol. Those are all sugar alcohols, and they're very, very poorly absorbed. When you don't absorb things, they go into the colon, they feed those colon microbes, and the microbes make copious amounts of gas. And that can contribute to some of the symptoms we see, for instance, in IBS.
So when you're on a FODMAP diet, do you just eliminate them one at a time or do you eliminate all of them and add one back? How does this work?
All right. Good question. So I'd say there's two approaches to doing the low FODMAP diet. The one that's most science-based is the elimination diet. Mm-hmm. So in the first phase of the low FODMAP elimination diet, you remove all high FODMAP foods all at one time. And then you do that for about 2 to 6 weeks. That's it. If you respond, fantastic. We move you on to the reintroduction phase. If you didn't respond at all and we know you're doing it properly, we get you back onto your regular diet and explore something else for your symptoms. It's not that. Don't stay on the diet if it's not working is my point, right? The second phase, we systematically add back FODMAP subtypes. So when I say subtypes, I'm adding back food in my patient's diet that only has lactose in it. And I'm testing that over about 3 days to see, does a half a cup of milk bother them? No, it doesn't. Does a cup of milk bother them? Ooh, it did. I think you have a lactose intolerance, but you can have up to a half a cup seems okay. Mm-hmm. Then we move on to the other various groups, the excess fructose. We would check and see, is that a trigger for you? The goal of the reintroduction is really to identify what's triggering and what's not triggering. And then the last phase of the diet is to really personalize it and get the foods as diversified as possible in the patient's diet or the individual's diet while still maintaining good symptom control. It can be magical, honestly. I am so about eating a wide variety of foods, living your life, have an ice cream occasionally, good relationship with food. But in these patients that have struggled for decades, really, to have something that you, it's almost like a magic wand. And they feel like this calm that they haven't felt in years. It can be very, very therapeutic. So that's the elimination diet. The more gentle approach that we use in clinical practice that is just being studied, we don't have the data specifically, is more to your initial point. Do we just cherry pick out some FODMAPs and see if that helps? And we often do that in clinical practice because it's less restrictive. You know, if I'm looking at someone, looking at their diet, and to me, it's so obvious, they're like pouring onions in every single dish, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That could be an easy thing, like just cut out those onions, please, and let's see how you do.
Yeah.
And that, just to that point, onions are the most common trigger. That's what we often see in clinical practice. They're healthy for 85% of people. They're really good food. But for some people with sensitive guts, they really trigger some pain and uncomfortable nature.
Okay. So what about like blood testing? Would that speed this process up? Aren't there blood tests for this?
There isn't. So the only blood test for like food sensitivities is really not science-based at this time.
Really?
Yeah. So like the IgG test, the commercial test, they're testing 250 foods. They just don't really equate to actual food intolerance. So that would be lovely, but there's really no way to identify them with a true, at this point. Mm-hmm. I hope down the line we'll see more data to do it quickly with a blood test.
That is really interesting because I've actually done those before as like somebody like gave it to me or whatever. And bananas showed up and watermelon showed up. And I was like, really? Like, I don't think I've ever experienced any issues with bananas or watermelon. I do notice that with like regular dairy, I got issues. But like specific, I know this is weird, but like ice cream. I don't eat ice cream very often, but if I eat soy ice cream, totally fine. And but regular, it's like my wife is like she jokes, I'm like a little baby. I'm almost like spitting it up. It's gross. Like my body just wants to reject it. It's so weird.
Yeah. You know, there's other components in dairy that can be problematic. The type of protein in dairy is, there's two different kinds of beta casein in milk products in the US and around the world because they pool milk. And some people are very sensitive to that beta casein in milk. So in that case, trying like goat milk or sheep milk could be better tolerated because it doesn't have that sort of beta casein that can be problematic that we see in cow's milk. So often with people like you, that's what I would do. I'd say, you know what? Let's get rid of the cow's milk. Let's try like a goat milk, and if you like it, or goat cheese.
I love goat cheese.
Yeah, and that doesn't bother you.
Zero.
Yeah, it could be more of the protein component that's triggering. It's called A1 beta casein, which is not in goat milk. So it's interesting.
Random question, but do you play pickleball? If so, you've got to check out the new pickleball features in the AIM 7 app. Pickleball is exploding around the world, and we've partnered with some of the top pro pickleball players and pain and mobility experts to bring you some amazing new features that will improve your game and reduce your risk of catastrophic injury and relieve joint pain. We've got warm-ups and cool-downs you can do right before you step on the court, as well as injury tools for calf, Achilles, knee, shoulder, and more. So check it out. The link is in the show notes. So let's talk about, the last thing I want to talk about is constipation.
Love it.
How do you, you're the only person that loves constipation. You love treating and helping people. So how do we prevent and manage this?
Well, you know, you do need to eat high level. You need to eat fiber, adequate fiber, right? And that doesn't mean if you're listening that you go from your 10 grams of fiber to 25 tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Remember, you got those microbes down there. You got to slowly change that ecosystem. So go slow and start increasing your fiber. Mm-hmm. Lots of plants. Plant diversity is important too, because different microbes like different plants. So you don't want to just be like, oh, I have a high fiber diet, but I eat like a boatload of psyllium and oatmeal every single morning and I knock out my fiber for the day. You want to have variety, lots of different plants. The other thing is listening to your urge to have a bowel movement. Some people have a sensitive intestine, and I'll admit I'm one of them. I don't really like to use the facilities in the public. I like to go to the bathroom at home. But if you're waiting all day or have a long day and you're waiting and waiting and waiting, that stool is getting more and more water is getting extracted. It's getting harder and that's difficult to pass. So you do really want to listen to your body's urges. The other thing I think that people miss, and it's really important, there's something called the gastrocolic reflex. And that is a mechanism that happens in our intestine when we eat food. So we eat food and the gastrocolic reflex is initiated. It starts motility. It starts propelling everything down towards our rectum. That is very active in the morning. And that helps us have a bowel movement in the morning. And that's why most people do have bowel movements in the morning. So if you can use that by eating breakfast and not skipping breakfast, like a lot of people do, you can actually maybe have a better cleansing bowel movement in the morning and be good to go. And you don't, even if you have a shy intestine, it's okay because you've already had your bowel movement. The other thing that I think is important that a lot of people don't realize is that when you sit on the porcelain throne, your rectal canal is not really in the position that humans were really designed to have. So you want to raise your knees above your hip. And we can do that with either placing some books in the bathroom that raise your feet up a little bit so your knees are above your hip. That opens up that canal so it's more straight in line with gravity than having this kind of angle. You can get something called a squatty potty, which I would say that the majority of my patients have, and that you just have that little streamlined thing, raise your legs, and it'll allow for an easier bowel movement. So that can be really, really helpful for people that struggle. And don't forget my two kiwi, I'm big on the green kiwi. And my little trick on this is we buy kiwi here. We love smoothies. So I have a smoothie almost every day. We get the whole, you know, rack of the kiwis, wash them up, skin on, clean the skin, chop it up, freeze it. Don't chop the big kiwi like all in a hole because it'll bounce around your blender, like not fun to blend. But if you're a smoothie person like me, I love it. I just throw a couple of kiwis chopped up in there and blend them right in and good to go.
I love this.
Yes, do it.
Yeah, with the furry skin on.
With the furry skin. Now, would I eat the furry skin like just sitting chatting with you? Eating kiwi?
No, that'd be very weird.
That would be weird, right? But you can blend it into the smoothie and it's totally good to go. And I know you mentioned psyllium husk, kind of like, I don't want you to rely on your fiber for psyllium husk, but it is a great stool softener and bulker. So for some people that just don't have a good formed stool, that can be really helpful just for eliminating. We want stool to be sort of soft. You know, often in the gastroenterology field, we say like squishing out toothpaste. Should just be coming out. I know. Sorry.
This is so good. Like, this is probably one of the funnest conversations I've had in a while because it's so helpful for so many people, but this is stuff we just don't talk about.
No. You know, it's interesting you say that because constipation impacts 1 in 5 Americans. And I was reading a paper in preparation for today because I was like, what's the stats on like who talks to their doctor? 3 out of 5 patient Americans with constipation have never discussed their symptoms with a healthcare provider. 3 out of 5. 1 out of 5 Americans have this and they're not talking about it. So I went on to X and I said, hey guys, like healthcare providers, start asking because it's not like the patient's divulging clearly.
No. Because, you know, there's certain things people try to avoid sometimes when they go talk to their doctors. Poop. And sexual issues are probably two of the biggest ones. But those things impact a lot of our life. And if you have issues with that, or you're not alone. There's a lot of people that got stuff going on. You should definitely talk to a qualified practitioner. Speaking of resources, you and Megan came out with a great book, or it's coming out soon. Can you talk about that really quick?
Absolutely. So Megan and I partnered together to write a book called Mind Your Gut. It's a science-based whole body guide to managing symptoms of IBS. So IBS is very common and it's a very life-altering condition. And there wasn't a book that really tapped into the psychological aspects of living with a chronic illness, but also just how that can snowball you sort of into a gerbil wheel. You're worried and the worry, and then that affects your gut and the gut movement and the brain and the microbes and so many things. And then there's just so much misinformation about diet and nutrition and how to do this. And I really want people to eat as much food as they possibly can in variety and enjoy it. I mean, I went into nutrition because I love food. I like think about what I'm going to have at my next meal and I'm excited. Mm-hmm. So I want patients to fall in love with food again, because a lot of people with IBS, they've fallen out of love. Food is fear and pain and there's help. And so we came together to really write this collaborative book that really brings it all together. So it's a full toolbox for patients living with irritable bowel syndrome, which, like I said, is extremely common. And a lot of people probably are not bringing this up, you know, at their doctor office either.
When's the date of the release on the book?
March 5th.
Okay. So this podcast will come out right around that time. So we'll put the link to where you can order on Amazon. You should definitely take a look at it. We've had Megan on the show. She crushed it. Lots of great information. And Kate, I'm so glad that you've come on. Please consider me a friend and a resource. And I'm excited for the impact that your book is about to have. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Pooping posture and poop consistency. You're only going to find that on The Blueprint. And if you found these two episodes of Kate interesting, do me a favor, take a picture of the podcast cover art. Go to Instagram at both of us and ask some questions. Let us know what you learned. If you have any questions for Kate, she'd be happy to answer them. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you on the next episode.